All right, get ready, because today we're diving deep into a story that's packed with layers. The Shunammite woman and the prophet Elisha.
Well, this is a good one.
It is. I love this story.
We'll be looking at excerpts from a lecture by Dr. John Oswald to help us unpack this tale from the Book of 2 Kings.
Awesome.
And trust me, this isn't just some ancient history lesson.
No, not at all.
We're going to explore what this story reveals about faith and gender roles back then,
Right.
and even touch upon the themes of life and death.
So much going on in this one.
Oh, yeah, so much.
Big stuff.
Ready to dig in.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this story takes place in Shunem, a town in the Jezreel Valley,
Right.
known for its prosperity and comfort. This detail adds a whole other dimension to understanding the Shunammite woman's character, right?
It really does.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because it's not like she's struggling to survive, you know?
Right.
She's clearly a woman of means.
She's independent, wealthy, and she's definitely the one calling the shots in this story.
Absolutely, yeah. She's a far cry from the stereotypical image of women in that era.
Exactly. Very much so.
She's the one taking initiative, making decisions, and her husband,
Yeah.
well mentioned, he seems to take a back seat.
He kind of fades into the background, doesn't he?
He really does, yeah.
And it really challenges our assumptions about women's roles in ancient Israel, doesn't it?
It really does.
It does.
So, how does this woman of action cross paths with Elisha?
Well, she recognizes him as a holy man of God
Immediately.
right off the bat, without him having to perform any miracles or spout prophecies. That speaks volumes about her, don't you think?
It really does. It really
I mean,
does.
doesn't that suggest that she's got a strong sense of spiritual discernment?
It definitely suggests that
Yeah.
it's like she sees something deeper in Elisha, something beyond the surface.
Beyond just the outward appearances,
Yeah.
right? And it makes you wonder, what qualities would make someone seem holy to you?
Oh, that's a good question.
Is it about outward appearances, titles, or something more intrinsic? Yeah.
It's interesting that Dr. Oswald uses the phrase a scent of life to describe Elisha.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
That's
that's
a
what we're.
powerful image, isn't it?
Yeah.
It suggests that true holiness, or maybe even goodness, has a way of radiating outwards,
Right.
influencing how we interact with the world around us.
Yeah.
It makes me think about how our own actions and character
Yeah.
reflect our personal beliefs and values.
Yeah.
What kind of scent do we leave behind?
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
And the Shunammite woman doesn't just recognize this scent of life in Elisha.
Nope.
She acts on it with incredible generosity.
Oh, she does.
We're not talking about offering a cup of tea here.
No.
She builds a whole room on her roof for Elisha,
Right.
complete with a bed, a table, a chair, and even a lamp.
The works. It's
It's
crazy.
practically a mini apartment
Yeah, you really was.
dedicated to supporting his ministry. It would be like building a guest wing onto your house for your pastor.
It would be like, wow.
That's some serious commitment.
I know.
It really speaks to her belief in Elisha's importance.
Yeah, she believes in his ministry.
Yeah.
And yet, when Elisha tries to repay her kindness
Right.
by offering to pull some strings of the king or the army commander,
You know, do her a favor.
do her a favor, right?
Yeah.
She turns him down flat.
She's just like, nope, I'm good.
I know, she's content, not looking for anything in return.
Right.
But then things take an interesting turn.
They do. Yeah.
Elisha's servant Gehazi
Yeah.
notices that the Shunammite woman doesn't have any children and her husband is quite old.
Ooh.
It's like he's sensing an unspoken sadness beneath her contentment.
Right.
That's a detail about Gehazi that often gets overlooked.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well, we tend to remember him for his less than stellar moments later
Oh,
on.
yeah.
But here, he shows a surprising amount of sensitivity. He picks up on a longing that the woman herself hasn't even expressed.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
And that observation leads Elisha to do something extraordinary.
Yes, it does.
He prophesies that she will have a son within a year.
Which is incredible, right?
Yeah.
Now, this echoes the story of Abraham and Sarah in the book of Genesis.
Right.
Another couple who faced the challenge of childlessness later in life.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal back then.
Well, yeah.
Not just a personal sorrow, but a social stigma.
Oh, wow.
Imagine the pressure.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I know.
And just like Sarah, the Shunammite woman initially laughs it off.
He does.
She says, don't get my hopes up.
Right.
It's almost like she can't even believe it.
Yeah, she can't even fathom it.
Yeah.
And her reaction underscores the cultural weight of childlessness in that time and place.
Right, yeah.
It was seen as a heartbreaking misfortune, almost a curse.
Oh, wow.
And of course, it highlights the seeming impossibility of the situation.
Yeah.
But isn't that often where faith comes in? Mm-hmm. When we're faced with those impossible situations.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
If we zoom out and look at the bigger picture, this story really emphasizes a core theme in the Bible, God's power over life.
Yes.
Remember, back then there were all these fertility cults worshiping gods like Baal and Asherah,
mm-hmm.
who were believed to control things like crops and, well, babies.
Right, right.
So by fulfilling this seemingly impossible promise...
Yeah.
God is kind of stepping in and asserting his authority over life itself.
He is.
Challenging those popular beliefs.
Yeah. He's saying, I'm the one who gives life.
Right. Yeah.
Not these other gods.
It's a powerful statement.
It is. Yeah. It is a powerful statement.
Okay. So we'll pick up there in part two.
And it shows that true fruitfulness, whether it's having children or experiencing spiritual growth.
Right.
It comes from trusting in God.
Mm-hmm.
Not from trying to manipulate things ourselves.
That's a powerful thought.
Yeah.
So against all odds,
right.
The Shunammite woman does conceive and gives birth to a son.
A son, yeah.
You can imagine the joy and relief after all she's been through.
Oh, absolutely.
But as we know, this story takes a heartbreaking turn.
It does, yeah.
The son suddenly falls ill and dies.
That's sad.
Possibly from heat stroke.
Yeah, maybe.
It's devastating, especially after the miracle of his birth.
It's like, how could this happen?
Right.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the pain she must have felt?
I can't even imagine.
It's hard to even fathom.
It really is.
But even in the face of this tragedy,
right,
the Shunammite woman displays incredible resilience.
She does.
She doesn't just collapse in despair.
Right.
She takes action.
She does.
She immediately sets out to find Elisha, convinced that he can help.
She's like, I'm going straight to the source.
Yeah. She tells her husband,
yeah.
Get me a donkey and one of the servants, and I'm going to the man of God. I'll be back.
Like, don't even try to stop me.
Yeah. There's an urgency and determination in her words.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not here. It's like she's clinging to that thread of hope,
mm-hmm.
believing that maybe, just maybe, Elisha can intervene.
There's still a chance.
Right. It reminds me of the story in the Gospels about the woman who had been bleeding for years.
Oh, yeah.
She pushed through the crowd just to touch Jesus's robe.
Just to touch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Believing that even the slightest contact would heal her.
Mm-hmm.
You've hit on a crucial parallel there.
I think so.
Both women show that kind of persistent faith.
That refusal to give up.
Yeah.
Even when things seem impossible.
Yeah.
It's a powerful message for all of us, isn't it?
It is.
To hold on to that hope, that belief in a power greater than ourselves, even when life throws us curveballs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what happens when the Shunammite woman reaches Elisha?
Well.
Does he drop everything and rush to her aid?
Well, not exactly.
Oh.
His first response is to send Gehazi back with his staff.
Okay.
Telling him to lay it on the boy's face.
Hmm.
It's almost as if he's testing the waters, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing if a symbolic gesture will be enough.
Right, yeah.
But it doesn't work, does it?
It doesn't, no.
The staff alone can't bring the boy back to life.
So the physical object isn't enough.
Not this time.
Right.
And this highlights a crucial point. Sometimes our presence is more powerful than any symbol or gesture.
Oh, interesting.
Elisha realizes that he needs to be physically present to truly make a difference.
I see. So he travels to Shunem himself.
He does.
And finds the boy lying lifeless on the bed.
It's a powerful image.
What happens next?
What Elisha does next is both fascinating and deeply symbolic.
Okay.
He lies down on top of the boy.
He lies on top of him?
Yeah. Mirroring the position of a mother giving birth.
Wow.
It's a powerful visual representation of God's direct intervention. His willingness to enter into the depths of human suffering. To bring forth new life.
It's an amazing image, isn't it?
It is.
It's like Elisha is embodying God's love and compassion in that moment.
Right.
Becoming a conduit for his power.
Exactly. It reminds us that God's love isn't some distant abstract concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's active, tangible,
mm-hmm.
and willing to meet us in our darkest moments.
even in the face of death.
Even in the face of death.
So Elisha lies on the boy, mm-hmm. And then
a miracle happens.
What happens?
The boy sneezes 7 times and opens his eyes.
Wow.
That's incredible.
It's a powerful testament to God's power over death.
Absolutely.
And a beautiful echo of the story where the prophet Elijah raised the widow of Zarephath's son from the dead.
It's like a parallel story.
Yeah, yeah.
These stories really challenge our understanding of what's possible, don't they?
They really do.
Yeah.
They remind us that God can work outside the confines of our limited human understanding. Mm-hmm. He can bring life from death, hope from despair, and make the impossible possible.
I know. It's so encouraging.
It is.
And it's not just about the miraculous act itself.
Right.
It's about the unwavering faith of those who seek God's help. Both the Shunammite woman and the widow of Zarephath refused to give up hope.
Mm-hmm, right.
They persisted in their pleas, trusting in a power greater than themselves.
Their stories are a powerful reminder.
They are.
That even in the face of unimaginable loss, we can choose to hold on to hope and believe in a God who can make all things new.
It's beautiful.
So we've got a woman of action.
We do.
A prophet who embodies God's compassion.
Yeah.
And a miraculous restoration of life.
It's all there.
But what's the bigger takeaway here?
That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, what does it all mean?
Well, if we step back and consider the cultural context, mm-hmm. this story reveals some fascinating insights about the norms and expectations of ancient Israel.
Okay, like what?
For example, the fact that the Shunammite woman is the one calling the shots while her husband fades into the background. It's pretty unusual for that time period, right?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Absolutely.
Dr. Oswald points out that this portrayal of a woman wielding such agency, making independent decisions, and owning property is quite significant.
It is. It challenges the typical assumptions about women's roles in that era.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
Big time.
It makes you wonder if the Bible is subtly endorsing a more egalitarian view of gender roles.
You know, I think it's less about endorsing a specific modern-day political stance and more about acknowledging the complexity and richness of the biblical text.
Okay.
The Shunammite woman's story reminds us that the Bible isn't a monolithic book with simplistic answers to complex questions.
Right.
It contains a diverse tapestry of narratives
yeah.
that reflect the nuances of different historical periods and cultural contexts.
So it's important for us as readers to engage with that complexity,
yeah.
to wrestle with the text and consider its multifaceted messages rather than trying to impose our own preconceived notions onto it.
Absolutely. We need to approach the Bible with humility.
Right.
Seeking to understand its historical context and the rich tapestry of human experiences it portrays.
And by doing so, we might discover truths that challenge our assumptions and open up new perspectives.
We might.
The story of the Shunammite woman certainly does that.
Oh, it does. It does.
It invites us to consider the power of faith.
Absolutely.
The complexities of gender roles.
Yeah.
And the enduring hope of resurrection.
That's right.
And it reminds us that God's love and power can manifest in unexpected and extraordinary ways.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the face of seemingly insurmountable obstacles.
Yes, even then.
It's a powerful story with layers of meaning that continue to resonate even today.
It truly is. And it's a reminder that the Bible, even in its ancient narratives, continues to speak to the human condition,
mm-hmm.
offering insights into the enduring themes of faith, loss, and the possibility of new life.
Yeah. It does offer so much to think about.
This story really makes you think, what can we learn from the Shunammite woman's example in our own lives?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
I think her story offers several powerful takeaways.
Okay.
First, it highlights the importance of recognizing and responding to that scent of life in others.
Right.
Just as she did with Elisha. So being attuned to those who radiate goodness
right.
and embody a deep sense of faith and purpose, mm-hmm. those people who just light up a room.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's about noticing them and then going a step further.
Right.
Like the Shunammite woman did.
Yeah.
And actively supporting them.
Right.
Encouraging them.
Yeah.
Helping them in their mission. Mm-hmm. And then there's her bold faith and decisive action.
Yes.
She didn't just sit back and wait for things to happen.
Nope.
She took the initiative. Sought help when she needed it.
Yeah.
And persevered, even when faced with unimaginable grief.
She's an amazing example for all of us.
She is.
It's a good reminder that faith isn't passive.
Right.
It requires us to step out, trust in something bigger than ourselves, and take action even when we're afraid or unsure.
Absolutely. To move forward, even when we don't have all the answers.
Yeah, that's good.
And finally, I think her story encourages us to reconsider the limitations we often place on ourselves and on God. Remember, she initially laughed off Elisha's prophecy because it seemed impossible.
Right.
But God often works in the realm of the impossible, doesn't he?
He does.
He loves to flip our expectations upside down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a powerful message for us today.
I think so.
What impossibilities are we holding on to?
What dreams have we dismissed as unattainable?
Yeah.
The Shunammite woman's story challenges us to embrace those boundless possibilities that open up when we trust in a God who can do far more than we can imagine.
Well, this deep dive has been amazing.
It has.
We've uncovered so much more than just the events of the story.
We really have.
We've explored themes of faith, gender roles, cultural norms, and the power of God to bring life from death.
It's a testament to the richness and depth of these biblical narratives.
It really is.
They offer timeless wisdom that continues to speak across centuries and cultures.
So as we wrap up, here's something to ponder.
Okay.
What can we learn from the Shunammite woman's example of faith and action in our own lives? How can we better recognize and respond to that scent of life in others?
Great questions.
Until next time, keep diving deep.